Welcome to Pipeline Meeting, where marketers come to talk about sales. I'm your host, Harris Kenny, and I'll be joined by a guest every Monday and Wednesday for brief 15-minute interviews where we'll share tips that you can apply to support your sales team and help them close more deals. If you don't have time to listen to this whole episode, you can skip ahead in the show notes in your podcast player or find the transcript at introcrm.com/podcast. All the episodes are published there. Before we get started, welcome back to part two of a two-part series with Justin Jackson, the co-founder of Transistor.fm. In the first episode, Justin talked about podcasting itself, how it works, the underlying technology, and the industry. In this episode, I continue my conversation with Justin, and we talk about growing a podcast audience. And I'll just say that there are some fundamental lessons in here that apply to growing any kind of audience, whether it's an email newsletter, a blog, or any other form of content, particularly if you're thinking about doing inbound marketing. If you haven't heard the first episode, I'd encourage you to hit pause, go back and listen to that, then come back and finish this one. Let's get back into it. How do you think about when people are thinking about growing their podcast? I read the podcast about the woman who encouraged people to walk a mile and how she saw this initial growth on Apple Podcasts.
The case study,
And then really kicked off on Spotify. And so it is a little bit more complicated if you're trying to get in front of people to navigate the different platforms. It seems like different platforms have different recommendation engines. It would be, in theory, easier if there was one player and you just pay them to put your podcast in front of people. Instead, it does seem like you have to do a lot more thinking.
Every single time there's been centralization, creators suffer. So as soon as most streaming music was going through Spotify, initially everybody was stoked. It's like we get all this distribution, everybody's using Spotify. So theoretically, if Justin Jackson uploads a rap song to Spotify, theoretically somebody could find it and listen to it. But so sure, the distribution is there. And maybe even in the short term, Spotify might give me more distribution. Like all of a sudden, I went from getting, you know, two plays on Bandcamp to thousands of plays on Spotify. It's like, oh, this is amazing. In the short term, you get distribution. The long term, you're always fighting some centralized algorithm, some big corporation that determines the rules, and some big corporation who's not beholden to creators, they're beholden to shareholders. And so they have to maximize value somehow. At one point, I convinced every small business to sign up for a Facebook page with the promise of more distribution. Bring all of your customers to Facebook. Don't work on your email newsletter list. Just bring all those people and get them to like you on Facebook. And then you can use Facebook as your centralized communication platform to communicate with your customers. And so businesses uploaded their contact lists and put up on all their advertising, like us on Facebook, and spent all this money and time getting people to like them on their Facebook page. Initially, it was good for them. They got all this distribution and all these cool tools like, whoa, people are commenting on our posts and sharing them, and this is amazing. And then as soon as Facebook had a critical mass and had power, they said, okay, door shut. Now you have to pay to reach your audience. Now you got to pay for boosts to get to your audience. And it makes sense. You entice people with the promise of distribution. And as soon as you've got a critical mass in your walled garden, then you shut it down. You're always going to be chasing these short-term growth hacks. So I think the answer for me, it's not completely satisfying, but I think individual creators are always going to need to do arbitrage on the big centralized platforms with the idea that we're not going to depend completely on them. So it's kind of like a little bit of Robin Hood action. You know, you go steal from the rich and you use those tools and you're on those platforms as much as it benefits you, but you're still stealing from the rich and bringing the gold back to Sherwood Forest or whatever. You're bringing it back to your own email list or your own RSS feed or your own website or something that is on an open protocol that isn't going to be, you know, killed. I think there's also just a larger lesson here about the way specifically that audience growth works. there's all these people on Vine that I followed, on Vine that I loved, that I thought were hilarious. I spent enormous amount of time with these creators on Vine. And then when Vine went away, I maybe still follow one or two on Twitter and YouTube, but those creators, most of them lost all of the benefit that they had accrued on on Vine. If you want to be a resilient creator, you've got to figure out how to, first of all, if you're going to be on centralized platforms, spread yourself a little bit more out, right? Sure, have YouTube, but also have a podcast. Sure, have Medium, but also just keep posting things on your own blog. The resilience and this kind of strategizing that creators are going to have to do, and small businesses, anyone who's trying to build an audience, is to have a long-term view, which is to say, I'm not going to give up all of my rights to get distribution from Facebook in the short term. I'm going to be thinking more long-term. And also how not to do content that's just trendy or just works right now. It's like, there's not a lot of substance there. And they're getting addicted to this idea that, oh, wow, I'm popular, people like my stuff, but it's just built on nothing. And the resilient creators with taste, I think, who think long-term, that's what you want. That's kind of what you want to invest in. And to be okay with even our expectations. Start a podcast and get 10 listeners. And if it grows, you know, a little bit each month, that's amazing. Yep. Instead of feeling like you need to upload a video to TikTok and have a million views in 24 hours. Modify your expectations and understand the true value of, you know, these kind of audiences, like a podcast audience, in a lot of ways, worth more than a TikTok audience.
There's a little bit of tension too in this balancing between, you want to have a hedge and be across multiple platforms, but they do also need to make sense for where your customers are, your audiences, the people who you want to talk to are. And that's where I've made this mistake, where I've been a little stretched thin across things. And then I'm just sort of doing mediocre work across multiple places. And therefore not really resonating and not really getting the full benefit of any one platform and not feeling like I'm having time to really create good content, tell compelling stories, and understand the nuances of how the platforms work. So, you know, I've been kind of involved in this culling process of, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm turning this off, I'm turning that off. And so I think that if you're small, you do have to prioritize. And so it's like this combination of like finding arbitrage, but also picking your spots, right? You may miss some waves. I mean, what people are saying about TikTok is like massive organic traffic and stuff. And for me, for what I'm focusing on, the content that, you know, I'm talking about around, you know, B2B sales and stuff, I think it's just okay to miss that wave probably. You know?
Yes. Yeah, for totally. You got to pick and choose. For sure, when writing on Medium was a guaranteed way to get tens of thousands of views, and, you know, there was, their homepage was basically whatever got hot on Hacker News or Reddit climbed their homepage, and then there was this virtuous cycle of getting more and more viewers and readers. I was there because it worked for me. I was still posting all my stuff on my blog and just cross-posting it there, and it helped me grow my audience, and it made sense for the time for me to do that. I missed other things at the time, like I wasn't as big on Tumblr. So you have to prioritize. And eventually also, I think the nice thing is that once you've built a base, you don't have to do as much of that work. For Transistor as the business, we focus on search engine optimization. We focus on affiliates, and we focus on what I kind of broadly call brand, which is our story, my audience, our reputation, our customer service, our product reputation, all these things. And that's enough for us to grow at the rate that makes sense for us. I think the hardest part is the beginning, where you do just need to hit this bar, your own personal kind of critical mass, which is like, to make this business work, we're going to need 2,000 customers. Okay, well, how are we going to get 2,000 customers? And, you know, in the beginning, you want to be growing 30, 50, 60% a month so that you can get up to that number that allows you to now relax and coast a bit more. The nice thing is that the reality for me was that I started building an audience in 2008. And then a decade later, I launched Transistor, and that audience was incredibly helpful. But I didn't grow that audience over a year. It was 10 years. You also don't have to be in a massive rush if you can. Again, not everybody can afford to take 10 years. It would have been nice for me personally if it happened in five. But in some ways, that's all you can do anyway, is just have these tiny actions that build up to something bigger over a longer period of time, that just accumulate into something that, you know, when I started blogging, I had five readers, and then it just kept growing every year. And then there was sometimes I'd get a big surge from Hacker News or one of these channels that I didn't control, but they were helpful. It still took 10 years to get to a point where it was big enough that it was helpful or whatever.
But I feel like you've been talking to creators and talking to like the creative process pretty consistently, right? I mean, over that time.
Yeah.
It's not like you were like, hey, you know, here's my thoughts on, you know, doing accounting for my small business and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, I was definitely more all over the place. But once I kind of found a direction that seemed to make sense, the metaphor I always think of is you have to eventually decide which direction you're going to point your boat and sail in that kind of general direction. Software and marketing and hanging out with programmers and hanging out with podcasters. And these aren't all exactly in the same direction, but they're enough in the same direction that it worked. At one point, I was like, really, I still am, but I'm really into urban design. And I blogged quite a bit about that. But that's a completely different direction from where I was. I had to choose which direction am I going to go. And I think having a kind of rough direction that's fairly consistent is helpful. I did have a massive change from like the first decade of my working life to software. That was like, I was going one way and then I turned quite sharply the other way. I think you can do that maybe once or twice in a life. And then you're just hoping that the direction you've chosen, there's going to be enough going on there that you can make a living and do well for yourself.
That's all for now. You can find show notes at introcrm.com/podcast. The theme music for Pipeline Meeting is by Neighborhood Vandal. If you learned something, consider sharing this show with a friend. Thanks for listening.